It's up to you.
Okay.
I feel like a CNN press conference.
You're on the air.
Okay. So this is the last... What? Right. This is lecture 7 of this year's Shovim plus 1, I guess, because we added this week. Let me just start with all the disclaimers since this is the last lecture. Number one, for all the people that have the handouts, the printed material, I'll just remind you because I only said it in some of the classes. The text was written for a class I give on Sunday nights in Yerushalayim, and as you see by its name, Kashrus 101, it was written for beginners. So if anyone feels this is like insulting, my apologies. In addition, it's written in modern Hebrew, or the transliteration thereof, as opposed to the Hebrew you're used to here for the same reason. Also, I see the boxes here, so if anyone still wants to buy a shul kashrus guide, it has nothing to do with me, it's the shuls. Take advantage while you can. I will say, if you haven't read it yet, even though it's last year's already, there's about 45 pages in there on different hashkachas that have nothing to do with the stores, just the hashkachas and their standards. And particularly the Eidah Chavedit portion has about 15 to 20 pages that addresses Pesach and how they label things and try to understand the madness that's called the Pesach labeling in this country. So there is merit to it, even if you don't go out to eat. Okay, the rabbi asked to add this lecture on because he felt mitzvahs, tulas, v'aretz, that's the general topic of all the mitzvahs that apply in the land, which is truma, maisa, ola, although ola applies in chutz la'aretz too, and kilayim, netravai, shmita. There's not a chance we're going to cover all of this tonight, even though I speak rather quickly, but we'll do what we can as with the other classes. These three pages in the class I do Sunday nights, which is an hour and a half a session, we did over a period of 4 to 5 weeks. But it's my goal with all of these classes were, and for those of you that have been here for all of them, I think by now you've realized it. The idea is to increase the awareness, to make everyone aware of what the halachas are and what the problems might be. And if we reach a level of awareness that compels one to ask a Rav, that's successful. That means, you know, this could be a red light, let me ask, or this is something that I used to think is a no-brainer, but now I need to ask. So if we've gotten to that level, we've done a lot. Okay, this group of mitzvahs, like I say, the mitzvahs, tulos, ba'aretz, the special mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us for Eretz Yisrael. Truth be said, when I came here a few years ago, it was like, I think first there was different stages. I think it's Lahavdil Elif Avdol, like the stages of mourning, the grief and the denial. First was, oh, they're special mitzvahs, we have to learn something. Then came, I'm clueless to what they are, what do you do with this, and it's not for me. And little by little you start realizing, anyone that lives here and puts food in their mouth has to have an awareness of these mitzvahs. Some more, some less. I mean, truth be said, you can today much easier than you could 25, 30 years ago. You can go to stores with a reliable hechsher, buy things that are hufushu tumos and masos, that tumor and mice is taken already, and it tells you all is not a problem, and you can get on with life that way. But that means you can't really ever take food from someone's tree and stuff that someone brings you from the farm, and ultimately, things do pop up. Okay, for me, what was first somewhat intimidating today is really very cool, and it's a big schus, it's a privilege, because now we've reached a level that not only we made Aliyah, now everyone, at least in the day of many of you, we preceded that, but now you have your Borsellino Nefesh B'Nefesh hat. When you finish brushing that off, comes the real life, and you got to realize, what do you do living here? And the truth is, you have to be aware of these things, you have to be aware of these issues. It's a wonderful schus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, that even the produce of the land has a special sanctity, a special holiness, and as such, we have to regard it differently. And an orange here is not an orange on Main Street in Queens or somewhere out in Hollywood, California, but it's an orange from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that says, stop, take your tithes, make sure it's not from the first 3 years, make sure it's not grafted, make sure it's not Shemitah year, then you can have your part. First, you have to worry about me. And I think that's an amazing thing. And it's a constant reminder that living in Eretz HaKodesh compels us to live on a higher level, to have increased awareness, and above all, increased knowledge of halacha. The inyanim of Tumas and Mises really came around with the conquest of the land. And then you had the first conquest, which was with Yeshua ben Nun, which was ended with Churban Bayis Rishon when the first base of Hamikdash was destroyed. Then we had the second with Ezra, Ezra Sofer, which was a lower level, as we know. Not all the Jews returned from Bavel, and not all they were not matish all the lands of Eretz Yisrael that was had the kedusha from the first conquest. And there's all the different machlokas about did the kedusha carry on? Did they have to redo it? All of that's not relevant for tonight, as far as getting into the machlokas. But it is relevant to know that there's kedushas of Eretz. Different parts of Eretz Yisrael may carry different levels from a different time, but at the end of the day, is what the common denominator is. Produce that is Jewish owned or was grown by a non-Jew but finished by a Jew, and if you'll read, when you read this, read the footnotes because they are important. Finished by a Jew doesn't mean that the Jew had to own it. It could also mean the Jew picked it, the Jew carried the basket inside the house. Once you do Gemar Abadah, finishing the work, carrying the fruit from the field into the house is what is Mechuyev of the fruit to have Truman Meisa taken. So that means as long as you're in the field, for people that harvest the crops, or if you've ever gone for these cherry picking events for the day, and you're allowed to eat achilas arai, it's called. You're allowed to eat from the tree while you're in the field and running around. Once you've gathered it together though, and you've taken it indoors, and now it's now chiyuv of Truman Meisa does apply, and you can't eat it anymore. Now it's tevel. Tevel being produce that tithing has not been accomplished on it yet. So there's the positive commandment of Tuma. Tafka, it's very timely that she has tonight for Daf Yomi, for those that are in it. Today in Daf Hei and Tumu, it talks about Tumas and Maisers, and one of the questions asked is, if I have 10 kilos of apples and I have to take Tuma, can I take the 4 rotten apples? Why do I have to use good apples? We can't eat those anyway. And the Maiser, if you took the rotten apples and you said Zed Tumasi, you did the thing, you made a bracha, if it was for sure needed a bracha, the truma is good, but it's not mitzvah min hamufcha, as the Gemara points out in Tmua, Daf Hei. It's not the way to do the mitzvah lechachila. The way to do the mitzvah is to take the nicer portion. That's the way you're giving Hashem his truma, or truma gedola is the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen, not the Kohen Gadol. The chachila was supposed to take choice part of it, and not the stuff where the bugs are like hanging out and flying around it. But we'll get into the actual practical ramifications as we go along. All right, there's a machlokas. That's nogea to today's Truman Maisa Midoraisa. Is it Minatorah or is it Midorabonim? Okay. We agree that on the 5 grains, which are the wheat, barley, spelt, wine, oats, as well as Tirosh, which is refers to grapes in the form of wine, and Yitzar, which refers to olive oil, we agree today that that's Midoraisa. These are still biblically commanded. Okay, and wine and olive oil are unique and so forth that when you're harvesting your grapes and you're harvesting your olives, should you know that you're making wine and grape juice out of them, those are the two items that you're not mafresh Truman Meisa before, but you do it after. You don't take Truman Meisa from the grapes, you don't take Truman Meisa from the olives, you take them from the wine and the olive oil. Those are two exceptions. Generally speaking, we take Truman Meisa before we bake. You need the sheets, there's 3 sheets, everyone please take one of each. So you take Truman Meisa on Tirosh and Yitzar, which is wine, grape juice, and olive oil after those two are completed, not before. They have a special Kedusha. Okay, the Rambam holds that it's still Midoraisa. The Rambam says no. Basically, like I said, the 5 grains, most people hold today Midoraisa, including Yitzar, Tirosh, grape juice, and wine. Everything else is Midorabonim. What is unique, though, as we know, the klal is sofek the rabbonim the kula. Whenever you have a doubt in the rabbinical prohibition, we're lenient because it's rabbinical. One great example of that would be Orla and Chutz La'aretz. Orla outside of Israel is mid rabbonim, and since it's sofek the rabbonim the kula, if we're not sure if something's Orla, we can be lenient. So you can beat any piece of fruit in the United States, anywhere you want, Mexico, and you don't even have to ask if it's Orla. If you don't know it's Orla, you can eat it. If you do know, that's a different story because Orla counts everywhere around the world. So the Trumas and Maestros are unique in the fact that the Rabbonim Chazals were so afraid of losing the mitzvah, the same as with Challah. In essence, when we learned Challah, which I didn't do here, but Challah is tithing. Challah is taking Truma from the dough. We call it Challah because it's from dough, but Lamaisa Challah is Truma. And when you say it, some people say Lafrish Chalam and Isa. Svardim say Lafrish Chuma or Zu Chuma. See, different Nusachot for the Bracha, but the point is Chal is the same thing. These are mitzvahs that are so critical to the land. Chazal was scared and didn't want us to lose them in this way, even though that they're Midah Rabbanan today, we still regard them as midoraisa. When you have a suffek tevel, if you're not sure if something was tithed or not, you must take tumen maisa without a bracha. So you, since it's a suffek bracha lekuli, you don't make a bracha, but even though it's midorabonin, you must take tumen maisa, which we will get into a little more as we go along. I chose to start with Orla because Orla there's no tikkun for. If something's Orla, you can't fix it. Tumen maisa, you can fix it. You can take Rabbi Malinitz's sheet, and he hopefully will be up here tonight for a few minutes to explain how one actually does this. But I read it a few times. It's quite good. It's pretty self-explanatory. Orla, though, Orla is defined by the fruits of a tree, the first 3 years of a fruit tree. The fruits are asa. That's midoraisa. That's a biblical command. The psukim, the makarot, the psukim are in the back of the brochure for those that want to find the makarot. And if fruit is orla, there's nowhere to go. So that's the end of it. Tumen maisa, you can say, you could buy fruits and you could buy vegetables, cucumbers, tomatoes, anywhere. You don't need a ashkacha if you can go home and take tumen maisa on your own. The only question would be if it's a suffek or vadai tefel, if tumen maisa was taken or not, and if you make a bracha or not. Obviously, if you're not sure, like any other mitzvah, we always do it without a bracha. The bracha is not makev, so even if you did if you performed the act and you didn't make a bracha, you still were mafish tumen maisa. It's not related to the bracha. Okay, some reasons for Orla we won't get into. This is all you'll read on your own should you decide you wish to know more. Orla, what is important, Shulchan Aruch tells us Orla applies to Jews belonging to trees belonging to Jews or non-Jews, not relevant, as opposed to tumen maisa is produce in a land that was either owned by a Jew or finished by a Jew. Orla applies to everybody. Fruits of the tree, first 3 years, those are Hashem's, not ours, nothing to do with it. Doesn't matter if Achman's growing it or Chaim Yankel's growing it. Same law. Okay? Orla is asur b'hano. We can't have any benefit from it. Orla means not just the fruit, but it means the seeds, the peel, anything that has to do with the fruit is asur b'hano. To the point where in Chodesh Nisan, for example, where you make the bracha birchat ha'ilan, birchas ha'ilanot, which is the mitzvah once a year, then Chodesh Nisan, you can't use an orla tree as well because you're having hano from it. You know, and I can tell you, just this week we were looking at I seem to find these things, but a bizarre product. They had this like natural air freshener that it wasn't made with chemical flavored fruits, but it was made with real fruits. And the guy was spritzing it, letting us smell it, and then I realized, wow, you can't buy these things. The ones that are fruits from a tree could mamish be orla and you can't have benefit from it. So you better off buying the fake air freshener. Why someone needs 100% natural air freshener is beyond me, but that's a different story. So if you think of it, though, in terms of fragrances from fruits, you really have to be careful. When you're not allowed to benefit from it, that can be manifested in many other ways other than eating it. That's my point. And smelling is definitely a benefit. Shampoos, right, so... Right, exactly. The psalmim, they sell these closed things with fruit inside, or cloves. Well, cloves is not orla, but an esrog would be. Esrog, by the way, even though we don't eat it, an esrog orla applies, and when it's applicable for Shemitah, for all other things, you need to know that esrog has a good hashkacha. You can't have benefit from esrog. You can't make a bracha on esrog that's orla. You can make one, it's a bracha levatola.
In this case, with the air freshener, why would you assume it's an orla problem?
Because he was made, I didn't assume, I'm just saying I don't know. He's saying it was made not with chemically, this is not made with chemical scent, but with real fruit scent.
So
real fruit. That's
any
benefit.
Any type of fruit where you have no information at all.
In Eretz Yisrael is midoraisa, everyone agrees. So suffek d'oraisa is l'chumra. So if you don't know, if I give you an orange and you say, I'll give you a practical example, very simple. Rav Landau's hashkachet, Av Beis Din of Bnei Brak, I don't know about today mamish, but last year and for many years, a few years before that, stop giving any hechsher on fresh squeezed orange juice. You may or may not know, in many Haredi neighborhoods, it's very common. They go around doors selling orange juice with a good hechsher, and it works. People hook up businesses with different moshavim. So he stopped giving a hechsher on fresh orange juice. Why? When I spoke to the guys in the Rabbanut there, they explained to me, the oranges used for orange juice are usually sugbet, sugimel. They don't use the best oranges. Those they sell is oranges, eating oranges. So what happens is there's companies that go around collecting the inferior oranges that are used for juice. They dump them in one place, the orange juice company, I guess, or factory, and they make oranges. So Rav Landau said, since he cannot, without absolute certainty, track down the origin of every orange that's coming, which means some of them could be Orla, he stopped giving a heksher on orange juice, because there's a suffix. A suffix, midaraisa, you have to be stringent. There's no way out. So now it's a soil, if you're not sure if something's Orla or not, you can't eat it. Take the same orange to New York, you can eat it.
You don't need a special hashash that this fruit is Orla.
You need to not know. Look, the truth is, it's not that posh, because if you go to the shvakim, like the shuk, I say shuk, I mean a Machane Yehuda kind of place, or the supermarkets like you have in Ramat Beit Shemesh or Beit Shemesh, based on a list that are published, like here's one, for example, Alicha Sodeh, this comes out, I don't know, 4 to 6 times a year, that's from Rabbi Fati's Beis Medrash, they put this out, and among all the different tshuvas that are in there about things having to do with agriculture, mitzvot, tefillos, baretz, they also publish a list. Like this particular is the last issue, came out at Hanukkah time. And he has a list in the back of the percentage of Orla in the shuk for all the different products being sold through the winter. So if you flip through it, it'll tell you, for example, carambola, which is a star fruit, passiflora, or which is passion fruit, or papaya, or an avocado, the Orla is like 30% and up. So those items, if you don't know, they're Orla.
30%?
Yeah, they're very high. So those particular items, if you don't know if they're all or not, you can't touch them. The mi'uta matzoi, the halachic average here is so high, like over 5%, Rav Yashiv says, is a non-starter. Most of the others, and I say most, and are below 1.5% to 0.5%. So there are many people that will say that you're allowed to go by the halachic rove, and there's a halachic basis for it, and this is stuff, if you want to really paskin halachal ma'isa for your shopping habits, I suggest you speak with your rav and not go by the lecture. But there are many people that know, if I go to Big Deal or Superstyle or whatever the supermarket's called here, I can buy stuff because I know whatever goes through the mainstream shopping centers works on these percentages. And these percentages change from season to season, year to year. You have to, if you're going to do it, you have to be on the ball. You have to know what you're doing. All right. Alternatively, the safer bet, or if you want to call it also the more machmir bet, is I don't want to be relying on the 1.5% because my mazel, that'll be the stuff I get. So you just buy stuff with a hefsher, and you know you have no problem. But there is a halachically a basis for buying an apple when they tell you the apples are under 1% because you know there's no mi'uta matzoi, I don't have to have a chashash for it, I'm allowed to buy it. You don't have to worry when the percent is that low because all is also bought to 1 to 2 on
you. I thought you said it was 5%.
No, the Uta Matzor Rabbi Yoshi said is 5. Anything under 5, you don't have to worry, he's saying.
You don't have to worry.
Right. But like I said, most people that want to be Bal Nefesh, somebody who wants to be on a better level, they buy with the Tudah. But I'm saying you can buy these things, and there is halachic basis for it. But again, you have to understand, A, it only applies to the main shopping industry, I call it, for the lack of a better word right now. It does not apply, definitely does not apply to boutique shops. I mean, some kind of a specialty store off the track. It for sure doesn't apply if you're going up north and you're stopping in a moshav on the way and all these stands on the side of the road. It doesn't apply to any of that. It applies to stuff you'll find in supermarkets and main shopping centers. That's what it applies to. And but you really, see, for me it helps only to a degree, if I wanted to do it, because it lists them by so many zanim, so many strains. It's like 1, 2... There's about 12 pages. It doesn't just say green apples. It gives you 5 different kinds of green apples. And red apples, 4 kinds. You really have to know the different kinds of fruit to identify it properly. It's not that posh. All right, but you don't have to be an Einstein to know when it says 30%. Here we have Zan of Pomelo Aduma, the Zan Ratzen. I don't know what a Ratzen Pomelo is versus a different Pomelo, but that particular strain is 31% Orla. So you know you can't. If you didn't know which is which, you need to buy with a hashkacha, because you see, 3 different pomelos, at least to me, they look the same.
Is it true that for fruit, you know, two different parents of Orla also? If you go into a supermarket and
I have a... The question is, the Tudah include Orla also? Tudah, generally, I've never... Well, I can't say never. Beit Shemesh is the exception. Except for Beit Shemesh, I've never seen a Tudah that doesn't include Orla. It usually says, Beli chashash truma mais and Orla. Or it'll say, Hufreshu Tumos Amasos, that tithing was done, Halicha Shash Orla, no fee of Orla, when it's applicable, also Shemitah will be in there. The Shuk in Beit Shemesh has signs that says, Hufreshu Tumos Amasos, and we have no responsibility for Orla. And Rabbi Swissy, the head of the Department of Kashrus, he explained to me, because the Shuk is one day two goat. They get it two down in the morning and expires at night. And they don't have the mechanism in place to track down the origin of the fruit. So they'll tell you, Truman Maison, the vegetables and the fruit. And if you want to live by a list like this for the Orla and that works for you, that's fine. But the Rabbanu says, don't come to us. We have no idea anything here to do with Orla. That's the deal in the Beit Shemesh open Shuk. Yeah. Is there a problem with papaya altogether? We'll get into it. I have a whole thing in here about papaya. There's a big problem in Eretz Yisrael. Basically, in Israel, if you're an Ashkenazi, you can't eat papaya grown in Israel. It's not a problem. You just can't eat them. If you're Sephardi, you can rely on Rav Avadi Yosef's psak that says that break the Adama, and all that doesn't apply. So depending what side of the, which shul you go to on the side of the street makes a difference in certain things. Papaya, passiflora, raspberries, even in Shulayim, I don't recall it. I wanted to look at one of my pictures of the Rabbanut Beit Shemesh Mahadran. The Yerushalayim Mahadran for fruit and vegetables will say also on the bottom, they're not allowed to sell papaya, they're not allowed to sell passiflora, they're not allowed to sell certain fruits because of this machlokas. And when it gets into that bigger machlokas, where Rav Kanievsky and Rav Elyoshiv and Rav Vosner say, or eights, and Rav Mordechai Yosef and Rav Avadi Yosef say, Adama, you don't want to be in the middle of that. So the point being, for Mahadran, Mahadran tries to be Mahadran, means everybody. So when it's Mahadran Eksha, they take the chumus from both sides, so they say you can't sell it. Something with raspberries, it's a moot point anyway, because so Rav Avadia says make grape Adama, and Rav Yosha says make grape AIDS, and they both say don't eat it because it's so infested you can't clean it. So it's a nice academic discussion for the base medrash, but you can't eat it anyway. That's basically what that is. Yeah, if you read through this, you'll see that I wrote a whole thing explaining it. Because Rav Sternbuch says, Rav Sternbuch is the Av Bezin of the Eidah Chavedit. Not the Av Bezin, he's the guy of it is the Gaon Av Bezin, that's Rav Yitzchak Tuvia Weiss. Rav Sternbuch's the next one down, he's not called the guy of it, though, he's called something like it, but I forgot what people. The Rivet, thank you. Rosh Av Bezin, thank you. So Rav Sternbuch says, papaya is not halachically a tree, for all different reasons, I list some of them. I give you the source from his Shilas and Tshuvas, you can look it up. Remember, what we call a tree, we see a brown thing going high up and branches, tree. A banana is the most common one, we learned that as kids. Bananas break the Adama, but it looks like a tree. Halachically, I'll read the Gemara, what a tree is not a tree. So it's the same with papaya and passiflora. Raspberries is a different issue. And if you want to learn more about it, go to the Jews and Kosher's website. There's a search bar on the right side. And punch in the word blueberries. Blueberry or blueberries, I don't know which way it'll come up. And you'll see a few really intense articles that explain in depth what the problems are with raspberries and blueberries. Okay, I wrote about it about 2 years ago. Ran around and spoke to agronomists and the different Ashkochas, Rav Frati's folks who are the Mumchim. And basically blueberries from Mahadran Hef should come from one of two places in the whole country. One is from the Shomron, one is from the Golan. And everywhere else, as far as Mahadran Hashem Gitzil, are pretty much Vadai Ola. And I mention this because it is a nice family outing. People, it's not that uncommon. People go cherry picking and blueberry picking, all this picking. Make sure when you're picking, you're not sitting there eating Ola. So when you go into a place, you need Ashkocha too. Just because you're outside and you don't have to have Truman Meiser taken, it's Achilas Le'ai. But it doesn't mean you can eat Ola, Chas V'Shalom. So you need to, when you do these things, you got to find out where you're going. Well, it's at least advisable. Okay. Shulchan Aruch teaches us all applies to trees of non-Jews, we said. If all becomes mixed, min b'mino, that means oranges mixed with oranges, or we're not sure of the olive oil or the oranges of after 3 years or during the 3 years, it's bottled 200 to 1. So I made you a little chart here on page 3, a quick review of our classes. So we know the famous one, the milk spills into the chicken soup, is 60 to 1, it's bottled. Wine is bottled 6 to 1. Truma is bottle 100 to 1, Orla is bottle 200 to 1, and interestingly, Neter Ravai, which is the fourth year, is never bottle. As the Lashon Halacha says, Afilu Lo Elef, Lo Be Elef. When Halacha says Afilu Lo Be Elef, it doesn't mean 1,001, it's good, it means never. That's the same thing, if you remember from Adami, we talked about a Ma'amid, a coagulating agent, that stuff that the rennet, or that you put into a cheese to make it coagulate. It's called the Ma'amid. Because it has such a potent effect on the cheese, it's never bottled. Doesn't matter if it's one drop in 10,000 liters. If that was treif, the cheese is treif, all of it. So the same thing with netter avoy, the same thing, some of the other very problematic things are smells, fragrances, and artificial flavors, because their whole purpose is to be stand out and to give flavor and smell and taste. These things are usually not bottled. It's very problematic. Well, they're more problematic than a regular item. Okay, now we'll go to page 3. How do we count 3 years? As in many cases, counting olah for 3 years is not 3 calendar years, but it's 3 halachic years. Okay, and that is why farmers are very busy before Rosh Hashanah, because if you get a tree in the ground 44 days before Aleph Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah, when Rosh Hashanah hits, you ended the first year of olah. So all you got to do is get up somewhere in Tammuz in July, plant a tree, comes Rosh Hashanah, 1 year's down. So it's simple. Okay, so the years end with Rosh Hashanah. So if you planted this May, Rosh Hashanah time is 5773 is 1 year, 5774 is 2, 5775 is the 3rd year. But after that Rosh Hashanah, you can't eat the fruit. Now you have to wait till Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat gives you the all clear to eat it. Okay, and the halachas, they are complicated for people who want, farmers who want, I find them complicated because I don't live it. When you live something, you know, you become accustomed to doing it, it becomes part of your life, it becomes a routine. And these are things most people have immigrated from different countries, it's already a new process. You have to be careful. You're also, taking Truman Maisa, you can't take from 1 year to the other. So the fruits from the last year and this year, you can't be mafis, Truman Maisa together. It's different years. You need to learn halachas. It doesn't mean, and I stress, it doesn't mean you don't go to the shuk and start looking like the date of manufacture on the peach. It's not going to have a date like the bottle of soda, so forget about it. You go to the shuk, you bought a kilo of peaches, you mafis, Truman Maisa, that's the end of it. But I'm saying, lechatchila, if you have a yard, you're picking lemons, and you pick some lemons, you know, in the Tisha B'Av time, and another lemon after Tu B'Shvat, it's different years. You got to know. You have to be aware that these halachas do come into play. Okay, so in this case, by planting, yeah, I wrote, so 30 days is considered a year, and 14 days is what we halacha Chazal tell us the roots have to take hold. So 44 days before Rosh Hashanah, which means if you planted before the 16th of Av, Rosh Hashanah rolls around, hivachtem, you got a whole year in, and this is a very common practice. In summer, everyone's running around a plant to gain a year. I'll go ahead and try to get as much area covered as we can. Okay, you wanted to know, there are certain crops that do not yield fruit during the first years, and that answers your question as far as, what's the call? Papaya. That's one of them. Okay. I write here also, percentage of all in the marketplace. If you read this paragraph, I wrote, in 2000s, all realities change annually. Right, so the safe I was using is Kashrus by Rav Yitzchak Fuchs. That particular book was printed in 2002, and it's important to know dates, because this is going to be at a date by the summer when the next issue comes out. They just change by the seasons and the crops. How they actually know what the all of is, I can't tell you. I will tell you, because I think it's fair. As you know, I always try to point out all the different sides. So Efrati says, this is the list, you can live like this. Kosherot has a list which they put out, which is similar but a little different. They have their list. And you go to Eda Chavede, they'll tell you the shuk is inundated with olah and you can't buy anything whatsoever without a good heksher. So you have to decide, like everything else, if this is the heksher I follow, well, these are the rabbanim who dictate my kosher's life, then you have to do what they say. But there are different ways to go. Sometimes you'll be lenient in one area, you'll be stricter in another. It's not for me to say for certain. These are things that's kedai to consult with your rav. Okay, for example, on the when I wrote here, I wrote in the summer of 5760, which is a few years ago, there were certain items that were 30% all or 27% all, or papaya was 80%. So there you go, papaya is like, the truth is it wouldn't matter if it was 50 or 80. Once it's ready over 5% or over 10, up your color dials. 10 is already the most make or the most lean view. After it's over 10%, you can't find anyone who says you can use it. Okay? Rav Avadya Yosef wrote, and I gave you that as well, what we just discussed. If you buy in the mainstream stores, you are covered, which is what Rav Efrati says, which is what Coach Sharon said. I really suggest, though, if you are going to make a practice of this, it's very worthwhile to speak to Rav first and see what he tells you. Okay? One of the other controversies are cactus. picture looks much better than color. But in here, I didn't finish the maimed. There's a whole thing going on about Sabas. First of all, I learned something. I didn't know Sabas came from the United States. I thought they were native to this part of the world. Shows what I know. They came from the United States, and basically, there's a big machlokas with Sabas of their Borei Pei Adam or Borei Pei Eitz as well. And I will tell you what the outcome is, but I haven't gotten to the ending. I don't want to read the last page first. No, the truth is, I'm not sure, and this is something you have to ask about. I'm not sure if the Ashkenazim, I don't think this machlokas is divided Ashkenazim and Sephardim. I think it's divided different poskim. Meaning, if the Ashkenazim say one thing, and you look in the mirror and you see Ashkenazi, it makes it easier. And if you're Sephardi, that makes it easier as well. But if you don't know, you don't know. Okay? But again, these are some of, I will point out, these are, as a rule, because I know people start wondering and asking, I can tell you B'datz Beit Yosef, because that Hashkocha I know well, which is a Sephardi Heksha. Their policy for the store, for the restaurants, wherever they give Hashkocha, is to adhere to the Ashkenazi Chumers, as well as the Sephardi. So, because you would ask in a case like this, well, what if this guy's serving me a wine chicken with a papaya on it? Because Rabbi Avadia says it's Brei Pei Adama. He doesn't have any problem at all, but I can't eat the stuff. And that would be a serious problem. They wouldn't do that. They'll accept Ashkenazim, don't need it, they won't use it. All right, I won't tell you about Rav Nachman because I have no idea. I haven't been into any of the restaurants, not into the kitchen, so I can't tell you anything. So these things are the general rule, and the Ashkenazi Hashem say they do the same. Like Rav Lubin, B'das Eder Chavei, Rav Lander, they say they take the chumas for shechita, for meat, for example, with sirchos, for Ashkenazim, are less stringent than Sephardim. And so Ashkenazim have the rerin. All the different inyanim, ups and downs, chumas and kulas, these B'das Hashkochas, in theory, are supposed to take the stringencies for everybody into account so everyone can eat there. Not everyone feels comfortable with either side, and everyone should act according to their rav, their conscience, their husband, their wife, whoever makes the rules. Okay, so once again, for those of us who are accustomed perhaps to walking down the street and seeing one of these Beit HaPri, or fresh fruit juice place, and you want to have a fresh almond juice, fresh lemon juice, or whatever works for you, you need to know that there's no issue of Tumma Mice and Ola. It's not that portion that we just showed you. Again, remember the Kedusha, you can't just have orange juice. You need to make sure it has Ashkocha on it. Okay? Okay, not all fruit trees have Ola issues. And this is very unique. I think most people don't know it. Truth is, it's good academically. It doesn't really help in real life. If someone planted fruit trees as a privet, is a kader chai, like a picket, just as a privacy, a demarcation for one's property. I'm saying I like almond trees, they have a beautiful leaf, and I'm going to plant 20 almond trees here between me and my neighbor because a fence makes good neighbors, but I don't want a wooden fence, I want to put up trees. So those trees are not Ola because he didn't plant them for the fruit, which is why if you're traveling on a highway and you happen to see, someone told me on certain highways, someplace on the Ayalon, for example, in the middle of the highway, there's orange trees. Could you eat those? I said, you could eat them, but you'd probably get hit by a truck while you're trying to get up to the tree. So, in theory, a tree that's hefka, that is not planted for the fruit, because it's like a tree that's planted in a public park, is generally planted for the shade or for the beauty that enhances the park. They generally say those trees, if the fruit's hefty, you're allowed to really take an orange and eat something, it's achila savai. Instead of eating outside, it's fine. You're allowed to eat an orange or two. Once you start stuffing stuff in your pockets and taking it home, you have to find out it's a different story. But Ola trees only has an Ola issue if the tree was planted for the fruit. If it's planted for shade, or if I can't imagine what other reason it would be, then it's not a problem. But again, since you don't know, and if you don't know, Suffolk all of the chumra in Eretz Yisrael, so if you don't know, you can't eat it. That's the end of that. So I said it's more academic, and it's just to know about it, because, wow, I know that.
Let's say you planted it for Gadeh, and then you said, well,
if you planted it for Gadeh Chai, and then you want to have it, ask a rav. There's not a halachic response, but from what I remember, you can eat them. Because you planted it really with kavanah not to use the food, but there's something you have to ask a rav, because it's a serious issue. Alright, the next thing is Eitzim Dushnatiim, which how they call it in Hebrew, which translates simply to the two-year trees. This is a very common entity and a very popular one, and it's growing in popularity as time goes on. What happens is the nurseries take seedlings, they plant them, grow them for 2 years. They extract them from the ground with a bag of dirt around them. They transport them to a farm, sell it to the guy with the certificate says this tree was planted 2 halachic years ago, which means now instead of having to have this tree sitting on your lot and you have to prune it and water it and cost money and be in your face and get nothing out of it, now you only have to do that for 1 year. So it's a big sale, it's a wonderful item. Okay, according to the chief rabbi of Israel, that is acceptable. And when a tree hits its final destination and it's planted, with the provision that there's a bag of dirt around it, the roots were never exposed, there's conditions that have to be met, the chief rabbi accepts it. According to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Shmuel Alevi Vozner, and Rav Yoshiv, as soon as you took the tree out, you start counting 3 years again. So why is this relevant? This is relevant because if you go to a Robin Hood fruit stand to buy fruit, or you go to a Robin Hood restaurant to have dinner, and you're having Chinese chicken or orange chicken, and you hold like Rav Yoshiv, Rav Ozner, Rav Kanievsky, those oranges are orla, and you shouldn't eat them. If you hold like the Robin Hood, they're fine. So I'm just throwing these things out at you because these are things to keep in your head to start realizing you have to make a lot of decisions before you run around to eat and decide what actually you go by or not. There's always exceptions. Rabbanut Yerushalayim does make an exception, and they don't use the Eitzim Dushnatiyim because the Rabbanut Yerushalayim says, since we're Mahadrin and we're the Rabbanut and we're Yerushalayim and this is the capital of the Jewish people, we make an exception and we don't accept the two-year trees because the two-year tree is a kula, it's a leniency, and we don't want to accept the leniency. So if you go to the Shuk and you bought Rabbanut Mahadrin Yerushalayim, in theory there's no two-year trees. But then there's an exception to that exception, and Rav Pinchas Kalish, who's the Rav in charge of the Mitzvot Tluyos Ba'aretz department for Yerushalayim, he explained to me that since the Rabbanut Yerushalayim feels that not accepting the two-year trees is a chumrah, it's a stringency, Lamaisa L'chadchila could accept it because the Rabbanut accepts it, but they want to be Yerushalayim, they want to be a step up, but for them it's a chumrah. So what they do is, if stuff gets mixed up, like basket one and basket two, one was two-year trees, one was not all by, according to the poskim, Rav Yoshiv, and so forth, if they mix up, they will use them. Because they feel since it's only a chumrah, if they mix up, they don't have to be machmir and chumrah, there's a suffix, they'll use it. So again, I'm not here to rule what you shouldn't use, what's good or bad. The point is, I tell you, Rabbanut Reshit says this, Rav Vozner, Rav Kanievsky, Rav Yoshiv says it's no good. So if you buy Rabbanut Mahadrin, or Rabbanut regular for sure, even in Yerushalayim L'chadchila, it shouldn't be two-year trees, but there is a chance because mix-ups, they get thrown in. And other places, L'chadchila will use it. So this is something to keep in mind when you're shopping for fruits and vegetables. You have to decide for Chumas and Maisa. So now you're learning, it's not just a matter, do I trust them, did they take Chumas and Maisa, but now you have to know policy. This is what they accept as Ola, as not being Ola, and this is what the others accept as not being Ola, and they're not the same anymore. So now it's inyan of something you have to know.
The Rabbanut
Mahadrin
texture will rely on this,
Kula
or not?
The Rabbanut, Mofen Goref. Generally speaking, the chief rabbinate Israel nationwide relies on it. Jerusalem has taken upon itself, because it's the capital of Am Yisrael, not to rely on it as a stringency. But if it's mixed up, since it's a stringency, they'll go for it. I don't know. I asked Rav Kalish, I asked the most. He says, unless you know otherwise, assume they rely on it. That's what his answer was. So you want me to tell you what Beit Shemesh does? I don't know, I didn't ask. You want me to tell you what Tzfat does? I don't know. Petach Tikva, tomorrow is the election for the Rabbonim there, tomorrow night, call the guy up and ask him what he's going to do. I don't know. You have to assume that they use two-year trees. That's an honest answer. Okay? And that's the policy of the chief rabbi, which dictates the guidelines for the rabbinate all around the country.
And that's a big percentage? The two-year trees?
The actual percentage, I don't recall. It's big and it's growing. Look, it makes sense. If I can buy a tree and pay a little more for it, and not have to water it for 2 extra years and have it take up land when it does nothing for me except soak up water, sunlight, you know, why would I do it? Follow? So it's difficult. All the issues are a big issue. Look, the Eidei Charedim, when I spoke to them, they explained to me, when you actually go to an orchard, it's not two trees, these are all the 6 trees on. You're talking about dunums of land, acres of land perhaps, where this whole section was planted 2 years ago, these are still all on. And they rope it off and they put simanim up. Shemitah Yedim even more strict about what they do with it. It's not just it's not just a little thing, all of a caution. And I don't think they set up a minefield either, but they do demarcate it seriously because you have to know the us. And then they take aerial photos. That I was impressed with. And I know of one place up in Yisora Ma'aleh that had an Eidach HaVeidit Echsha, the key being on had. And the, you know, they compared aerial photos over a period of X amount of time. And they told the guy, like, you know, when the fruit falls off, leave it. Let it become compost. Let it fertilize land. You don't touch these trees. You don't go inside. You don't do a thing. Food's there. It's there. Gets rotten. Falls off. Falls off. We want to see that everything is the way Hashem made it. Don't touch anything. And then one of the photos, Pitom, everything's clean. All the fruit's gone. He said, where's the fruit? Oh, it's getting rotten. I got rid of it. He said, that's nice. Now you got rid of your Hashem too. They left. Because they know this guy packed it up and sent it to Chutz La'aretz. That's what they do. They can't get away with it. It's harder to sell the oil in Israel. So they pack it up, send it to Grexco, and send it to Chutz La'aretz. There's a lot of oil in Chutz La'aretz. The good news is, since you don't know if it is or isn't there, and it's a suffix, since it's Midrash Rabbanim, you don't have to worry about it. But a serious heksher doesn't want to be part of someone who's going to be sending oil around wherever they're sending it. Okay, so they have mechanisms in place. It's not like some rav gets out, walks around for 16 hours trying to see what's going on with the trees. They're far more sophisticated. The Eidach HaVeidit, for example, during Shemitah, all year round, they have a command center. They mamish use satellite imagery. They also have like every new mashgiach is very happy. He comes in, he gets a mirrors, you know, free phone. He can show everyone in base marriage. I work for Eidach HaVeidit now. And they're all great. They don't realize they use these things to track them down. And they do. And they know where the guy is when, and they know when he went to the store, he didn't go to the store. They're very sophisticated. They don't play around. And they'll see that, you know, how come this thing didn't move for 4 hours? Where were you today? And they really do stuff like that. So that's it. You're running a major operation. It's not something involving five people anymore. Okay, Rabbi Balunus, you wanna, perhaps we should stop, let you do this. This way there's time for it, and I'll finish after, because this is Halacha L'maisa. I think you should. Up to you. Okay. Netu Avai, we said this. All is the first 3 years, Netu Avai is the fourth year. Okay, Netu Avai, as we explained, is not Batal at all. I feel a little bit Elef. And during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, these fruits were eaten in Yerushalayim. Today that we redeemed them, since unfortunately the Beis HaMikdash isn't there yet, Mi'etz Hashem, tomorrow we will be doing it again. But that's not the case tonight. Okay, and this is another level of the sanctity, another level of these marvelous mitzvot tulus to'aretz that set us aside from Chutz La'aretz, that led us really be involved in a mitzvah like this on a day-to-day and a mundane, so-called mundane things, when we're just eating, buying fruits and preparing it before we eat. In addition to the bracha we shown in Achron, we also zochet to be mekayim these mitzvahs as well. And I think it's part of the wonderful package that we called Aliyah that we're now living here, but it also demands enormous responsibility of reaching a level of familiarity with the halachas that enable us to do it properly. Or at the very, very least, to know when we need to ask. If we know when to ask, that's a good starting point. Okay. I did make a note on the top of page 8, just to remember, you have to be machshir fruit. That means it has to be suitable to be makabel tumos, and that's like people that live in the old city of Yerushalayim. We talk about the seven mashkot, the seven liquids. So basically you make the fruit wet, then it can be makabel tumah, and then it can be mafish tumah maisa. Because you don't want to be, you know, I won't say the ashkocha, but you think of alarming things. Found a pizza shop last week that had two ashkochas, one abadats, not, we won't say dibadats, abadats. And make it very short story, walked in and it was very, very, the mashkiach was very happy to see the visitors, and he wanted to show how diligent he was and how he's mafish challah from the dough. It's not one of most pieces, many pizza shops today buy dough already after the challah is taken. Makes life simpler. Like many of the pizza shops I saw in this area when I did the book, they show me, they buy ready-made dough, it says ufushu challah, all he does is stores it into the machine, he's done. But this is the old-fashioned place to make their own challah, and he said, look, we sacrifice challah, and we burn it off. And like 100% here, let me show you. And he opened up the oven, and there were balls of challah sitting right on top of the pizza pie cooking off. I said, whoa, I didn't say a word. The mefakeach of the hashkacha was like, because if you remember from challah, it's chuma, it has kedusha. You're burning it because you're trying to discard of it respectfully. Some people double, triple bag it, put it into the trash. But if you're cooking it on an oven grill, the kedusha spreads to the oven, you have a lot of problems, like using an oven again. And for sure, that pizza pie sitting next to it is now his kedusha. You can't eat the pizza pie. So here he was, all happy, and he opens it up, and I just said, "Wow, I even know that." So that was interesting. I left at that point, and Fakir was dealing with very serious issues. It is very serious. So, like, again, if you're one of the people who wants to burn the challah off, you have to make sure you burn it off properly and wrap it very well. You don't want to. You don't want to render your oven, put your oven into a problem. I don't want to say the word treif because it's adding kedusha to it, but it renders it that you might not be able to use it for other things. And for sure, food cooking on the same grate next to the open challah is not a good thing. Okay, there's inyan of kalayim. These are just terms I mentioned very briefly. There's also a little lexicon at the end, helps tie the things in for things you're not, words that may be a little unfamiliar. Kalayim, there's many different kinds of kalayim. There's kalaya kerem, which refers to grains and vegetables, and there's zra'im, which refers to the seeds, which is applicable in Eretz Yisrael, not outside Eretz Yisrael. And grafting is another issue why you need a good hashkacha for certain, for fruits, because there is grafting. There's mixing different kinds of fruits that is not halachically an issue of grafting, and then there's grafting that's halachically prohibited, and you want to make sure you're buying in a place. Again, there's another inyan that applies to the fruits, and you have to know what you're buying. That's why you see with estrogen, for example, bilti mokav, you see that they're not grafted. You want to make sure you're getting an estrog, not an estrog that's a half lemon or something else, chas v'shalom. So these dinim are applicable, and they're not always visible to the naked eye, so to speak, and we have to just be aware that a respectable hashkacha, and that's subjective to each person, whatever they call respectable, does cover many things besides having the concerns, did they just take Truman Maisa? I would hope that anyone that hangs a sign up that they took Truman Maisa did, but it comes back to the fact of the two-year trees and grafting and watching and the orla and many other issues that we discussed. What? Right, you're not allowed to grow it, you're not allowed to water it, you're not allowed to take care of it.
So you're allowed to eat the product yourself?
You're allowed to eat it to the best of my knowledge, but you don't want to...
You're allowed to eat the fruit.
Right. The issue is on the guy...
You can't have such a tree.
Right, the issue is on the person growing it, and the watering it, and the taking care of it. That's the issue.
You can't buy a tree for me. You can't buy a tree for after my hand. Right now, it's 6 months old, and then we dig it, buy it,
I don't know. I would assume if it's grafted by an Isur to buy it already grafted and keep it going, I would assume it's an Isur. I said, I don't know. We have a halachic sort. If someone already has a tree that's grafted, can he take that tree now, replant it in his house? That's what I'm saying. It's an Isur. So it's an the tree is an Isur.
It's also to graft, it's also Isur
to grow.
Grow a grafted tree. To water it or fertilize it, prune it.
Which is why when you go to a nursery to buy trees, you also need some kind of a call it a hashkacha. You need someone to verify that these trees are mutter. You can't just buy a tree anywhere. Because it could be chas v'shalom, a tree that's asur, and by everything you do with it, keeping it alive and growing, is an issur. You're not allowed to. So you need to know that too. You also need to know, all is less problematic because you can always be strict and say, I'm starting now and that's it. Also, if it's 7-8 years old, it's fairly obvious even to someone who's a novice, you can tell it's not a 3-year-old tree.
It seems that never really have to check with people that know.
Right.
There are, I always ask my questions to Saul, what's his name? What? Glasson? Yeah. No, that's not his name. I ask my questions to the guy that spoke here by Shmita. He has a business here. Anyway, he can tell you what kind of trees are usually, like citrus fruit trees, are very often grafted. So he will tell you, let's say, an orange tree is often grafted, but a different kind of tree is not. It's good to talk to the experts, the gardeners, you know that stuff. They can tell you which trees are grafted, and I don't think nurseries have to check.
I have not seen one yet that has.
So it's going to be a problem.
And this is a biggie when someone, especially coming aliyah, you have your new house, finally move in, you want to have it a garden. When people buy trees and they don't know what they're buying. I would say probably most of the time, but you need, first the awareness, like I said, is now that they have an awareness that you need to look into it, at least you can start looking who to ask. But unless you know there's even a problem, you don't know to ask. And unfortunately, many newcomers from abroad are clueless to these mitzvahs and the responsibilities that are involved with addressing them. Okay, so we'll move from all the Demaya self-explanatory. I put in a paragraph just to give you an explanation of what it is. Trumas and Maasos, tithing. Okay, there's a few different ones. It's important, they're written in the order they have to be taken. You can't just randomly change the order around. Okay, like we learned, I guess, said before in today's Daf Yomi, it should be Mitzvah Min HaMuflah, is not to use the rotten stuff, but to use the nice stuff, an edible item, not the stuff that you wouldn't want to use anyway.
Even today, even when we're talking about it?
You can, but you shouldn't. That's what I was taught. You shouldn't use use rotten fruit today. You can. You're yotze to the mitzvah.
Yeah, that's one of the things the Rabbanut does.
Right.
A matter of fact.
Right. I know. So I'm saying
it's
as we. It said like
not
we just.
Rotten, not rotten. If it's royal achila, they are cut. Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be the
story. The din of min hayofer is no longer. But if it's only royal achila, they are cut.
Right, like I said, today's daf, so it works out well. All right, so mitzvah min hamufka is to take what you would eat, as opposed to taking what you want to get rid of because you don't want to use the good fruit. But if you did, as far as I was told, I asked this morning as well, if you did it, like the Rav said, atchak, it's b'di'evid, you're still mafrish and you can get on with life. But it's not the ideal way to go about the mitzvah. L'chadchila. Okay, I'm not going to get into the measurements because the Rav will explain his sheet and that will far surpass anything I'm going to say. But it is important in the tithing, mafish, tumen, mice has to be done in order. As the sheet says, as the chart says, it's not a random order. It has to be done in the sequence it said. Extremely important, and many people simply didn't know or don't cop it. One has to understand the nusach. You have to understand what you're doing and what you're saying.
That's right.
So it's not just... sort of like, I guess, Bi'ul Chametz. You have to know what you're saying, too. You can't just say, Kafa da'ala, whatever I said, and that's cool. You have to know you're calling something Bittul. It's Bittul here. You have to know you're being mafish and what you're doing, and the Rav will explain it. Okay, Tevel. Tevel is an item where we're not sure if Tumen Maisa was taken. Okay? And there's Suffolk Tevel, which is more common, perhaps. I will say there's, what was explained to me by many people in Yerushalayim, they have what they call at least Ma'ir Yitzah, Minog Yerushalayim. And there are many people that I know that no matter who they buy from, they're mafresh truman mice at home. It doesn't have to always do with trusting the dashrocha do the job, but it has to do with questions about the shlichus and was the balabayit, the owner of the store, there to appoint the mashgiach. And the mashgiach, it's really not the case. It's sort of, there's no difference here than the factories and the tuna fish and the canned foods and everything else we talk about. The food industry is massive. Everything is mass production. And Truman Maisa today is massive. It's not like it used to be. So a lot of times Truman Maisa is set aside by the Rabbanut in using heterim that are b'di'evid, whether it's breva, whether it's using the not the best of the fruits, a lot of different things. So there are many people, and I've seen the Yushamim who live in our community, people that are born and raised here now in their 80s, they explained to me that it's Nahug, you go home without a bracha because it's Suffolk Tevel. And their mafia is Truman Maisa. They're always being sure. Alright? And what I've seen, the Rav will immediately correct me if I'm wrong, but when asked Rav Yalshiv many times, the question, the obvious question, which I thought, I thought of it's obvious, others did as well, the Inyan of Baltashkis, of wasting, and the answer was whenever there's a suffix, you set without a, what you set aside without a bracha, and it's not a Baltashkis. You're trying to be absolutely sure that Chas v'Shalom not eating Tevel, because Tevel is a serious issue. So, you have to be certain, okay? And again, like I said, if you see someone setting aside, it's not always an inyan, he didn't trust the mashgiach. There's more to it than that, and a lot of it I read in Rav Efrati's books, which I do subscribe to. He writes it at length, it's quite interesting actually, about there's many questions that are posed regarding the actual shlichus, and is it an ideal situation, or is it an ideal situation that's the best we can do in a commercial setting? And many poskim agree that it's the best we can do in a commercial setting, so one that is able to set aside again at home, once you're the owner, then it's yours. There's no more question. You will point yourself to Shviach and take it to a Maisa, so all the problems are solved. So many people do that as well at home.
You have to realize what this means. It means that the person, if these people, and I know many people like that, they go to a store and you buy salads for Shabbos. You go to and it's Eidah Chayim Zachshir, they're in Ezra's Torah, the frumus to the frumus. They get home, they start taking on trumas and maizes from every
salad.
Single min. You have to take all separately from tomatoes.
Min al mino.
buy salads, people down there, you know, they come for a simcha. I've seen people, they come on Friday, even they bought stuff, they have a mahalvin, caterer, everything's beautiful. But they come in here Friday, it's called Ibbemeiser, that's the Yiddish word.
Right.
They Ibbemeiser everything before Shabbos. I've seen them do it.
Because we're not lawfish on Shabbos.
Here's every wise mandel, right? Who has a wonderful lecture, best fashion there to smell. I get mentioned. That was a joke. But ask him, how many, like the percentage of people, it's much higher than you would think. The amount of people that come in Friday to improviser all of his stuff, salads he made, kulu the kulu. You don't have to do it to chicken, but if you use the oil, you know, it's all, how far do you
it's a lot of work. And how far do you
improviser.
I do also, most of the time. I do get lazy sometimes, I have to admit.
I do not.
But I do it most of the time.
What's the logic of this of the not texture to that?
Because it has to do with the shlichus. It has.
If on the salad.
I'm saying because there are built-in coolers.
It has to be. Let me explain to you. You're the mashgiach for Rabbi Malinowitz, the Rabbi Nud, whoever you want to work for. It doesn't matter, okay? My name is Yechiel. I work for your store. He's out in the Bahamas on vacation. I'm running the shop. You come to be Mafish Truman Meister. He said, good morning, can I see today's delivery receipt? Here's my receipt. I got 1,000 kilos of tomatoes. So you do a quick hedge when you say, all right, now give me the amount I need. Put it on the scale. Take your hatchet. Cut it up. They cut it up because they want to make sure that when they turn around and leave, you don't sell it. Okay? But what you've done now is you've diligently taken Meister. You've said the Nusach correctly. You've checked the weights, you know the amount was correct. The only thing you couldn't do is get permission from the owner. And the owner has to give rishus for you to be mafish to and maisa. You can't go to my house and just start taking stuff off the shelf being mafish to and maisa. It's not yours. You have to ask my permission. So since the owner's away on vacation, he can't give you permission. Or the owner comes to work at 11 o'clock because I'm the boss. Why should I be there at 7 when the Mashgiach comes? So that's already a built-in cooler. But because the world is what it is, and the owners aren't going to always be there, and you're dealing in hundreds of thousands of perhaps tons a day of fruit around the country and vegetables, these coolers are accepted. Just like the Mashgiach gets stuck in traffic, he calls up and says, I know I'm supposed to be there at 9, it's not going to happen, I had to take the kid to Kupat Cholim, whatever the reason is. How much should you get in today? And he starts reading him numbers on the phone, he starts doing a machshav in the car, I'm going to be mafish this, mafish that, and he does it b'kavana, he does it b'braver. And you're buying the stuff now, you're taking it home, and Truman Meiser wasn't actually physically separated yet. It'll be done later, b'di'evet, but it's b'di'evet. It's not the chatila. Okay? And this is commonplace. Like Rabbi Kalish, the gentleman I spoke about, was in charge of the mitzvot stories, but he told me, tell people that those who don't want to be somech on this kulav, that things being taken by braver, being done b'di'evet later, don't ever go shopping in Machne Yehuda before 9:45 in the morning. Because till 9:45 in the morning, the mashkicha may not have gotten around to doing it. And people don't know this. I go shopping at 7:30, especially Erev Shabbos. I want to beat the rush. My 9:45, the place is a zoo. So there's kulo upon kulo upon kulo. And Big Rabbanim have said this is acceptable, but they say it's acceptable, but b'di'evet. It's not. You can say it works, and you can say it's acceptable, but you can't make it l'chatchila, because l'chatchila means the boss has to be there, he has to give you permission, you have to physically take it, not do it on the way in, you know, in your mind, having kavana, and doing it later. But the reality of the marketplace today is such that these have become incorporated into the regular standing operating procedure. And the Ibbemeister and the Minhag Yerushalayim and whatever one calls it says, I'm not making fun of anyone, Chas v'Shalom, and I'm not begrudging them, but I would like to do it l'chatchila. So once I took ownership of it, let me go home and do it the best way possible. That's all it means. And of course, it's done without a bracha. Okay, so that's again, you'll start seeing as you're learning more and more that they do things, it's the same with challah, by the way. Sometimes the mashgiach takes challah for the day before the dough is even made. I've seen places where, what are you making today? And he's mafish challah on stuff that doesn't, there's low bab olam of any. They pull really heavy duty coolers out of the hat sometimes. You know, in some places a makpid that only the mashgiach must be there to separate challah, and if he's not there, you wait. Other places appoint an oved ne'man, a trusted worker, he'll set aside challah. Some have sheets they want to see documented during the course of the day. You know, it depends on the business. A pizza shop where they're making dough constantly, it's more difficult. In other places, it may be easier. Point being, the different hechsherim have different acceptable rules. And as you go along, you start realizing it's not always about the hype of all ingredients badats. And I told my class last night, if nothing else came out of this, I hope enough already when you see a hotel advertisement for Pesach or cottage industry for the best oatmeal raisin chocolate chip cookies, and they say all ingredients badatz. I always say, I'll give you that, all ingredients are badatz. I'll even say which badatz, we'll say the best badatz, whatever that is for you. But what about all the other issues that we learned about now? Where did you buy the fruits and vegetables, and who was mafish them, and do they hold by two-year trees, and was the flour sifted, and was the spices sifted for bugs, and was it kept under refrigeration, and do you use the same spices over the hot steaming chicken soup pot that you use for the puff cookies, and do you check flour, and do you know that raisins can become contaminated with bugs, do you soak them in water, you don't, and it goes on and on and on and on. So telling me everything is badatz when you don't have hashkacha, it's not, for me personally, it's not very, it doesn't really put me at ease all that much, because I know the average person is, does their best, and they really are sincere, and I don't think anyone chas v'shalom is trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, but not knowing, you can't go through life always not knowing and saying I did my best, but I never bothered to try to learn, it doesn't work. And that's what hashkacha does. Hashkacha says, you don't have to know. We're here to know for you. And when I walk in, I see a sign, this simcha is under hashkacha of whoever it is. So now you can say, wow, this rabbi's here, he took care of it. So the guy in the kitchen took care of it, that it's tasty and fresh. And the guy in the corner with the beard took care of that halachically everything's fine. Go wash, make the tzedakah d'chaim, enjoy the simcha. But you need the two together. Hashkacha is not there to trip people up, and it's not there, chas v'shalom, just to take people's money. And as I say over and over again, anyone that thinks there's no politics in the hashkacha business is a fool, but anyone who thinks it's only politics is a bigger fool. And the hashkachas are there, and they work, many of the proper hashkachas work tirelessly to make sure that the average person, I say myself as an average person, who by far don't know enough halacha to make the decisions that have to be made on a on-the-spot basis, or at least have access to the person who needs to be called, who has the halacha in mind, that can make these decisions, to ensure that ultimately the food that we're getting is what it's supposed to be, and not some kind of compromised halachic state. And that's what it's about. And that's why today everything needs hashkacha. And I will close and let the rabbi continue with my famous thing, is, you know, we say it's a joke. Well, everything needs hashkacha, it's a scam. Someone said to me, why do I need hashkacha in bottled water? And I thought that was a very fair question a year and a half ago. I didn't have an answer. I said, how about I get back to you? So I went to the OU and I went to the Eda Haredi and said, why do you need hashkacha in bottled water? So they said, how about, we'll give you an easy one. The thing that was on the line before the bottled water was milk. No one kashered the equipment. Now the water is milking. Cheskat cholavi at the best. Do you know that? I said, wow, that works. He said, you buy bottled water, use it for a meat meal, don't you? So what if it was milking water? You wouldn't know that.
There's a real mitzvah?
Why not? You think that every plant is only going to... You don't make the assumption that a plant... If your place like Red Mug, Nescafe Red Mug, as Rabbi Schutz explained last year, the expert on ingredients and whatnot, when the plant is that, when a company is that large, and not everyone is that large, so that company runs their coffee, no one else's coffee, 24/7, that's all that goes on. But many other companies rent out plants. Not everyone can afford steam dryers. A steam dryer is the size of the shoe building. Not everyone affords it. So they rent the place for 4 days. What do you think the street is? You have all the different hashkachas, the shkitas that you've been hearing about, learning about the badassim, they don't all have their own slaughterhouse. They rent space and they go to Dani Mizrahi in Atarot, Northern Yerushalayim. Tuesday and Wednesday is Rav Rubin. Thursday and Friday is Badat Eda Haredit. Sunday is someone else. You rent space. So as long as they know that all the minimum is on a high enough level, no one's worried about anything, they're fine. You know, or certain hashkachas, I'm not talking about the chicken, they'll come into a factory, they'll do what they need to do before they'll touch anything. Others will say, we accept it. That's also knowing what hashkacha we use. The Eda Haredi tells you, like, they will not kasher a treif place. If it's treif, they won't go there. The OU says, we will kasher a treif place. So that's fine. Each one has what to be somewhat on, but they have different standards. Because the Eda Haredi says, when you're going from regular kosher to mahadrin, the mice, it's a chumah that you're kashering, but that's a chumah we live with because we always have to do the best we can. But when I'm going for treif, if chas v'shalom I miss the spot, now it's treif. They don't want that responsibility. Other Hashem will say we can do it. So it's again, it's an outlook, and you have to decide which rabbanim you want to put your faith in, or which policy speaks to you, or which is farther enough from that slippery slope that you know, even if it was a bad day for this extra, I'm so far in the safety zone, I know I'm eating kosher l'chadchila. Yeah?
Well, basically, just about the bottle of water, you know, in a dairy environment, you know, I know Americans say by law they would have to stamp on it that manufactured in a place that had traces of dairy farming.
Today, yes.
So, like,
but I also have learned, and I think if you want the best proof, I suggest you follow the olive oil industry, not from the kosher list, but from the olive oil industry. Just start doing searches on Google and you will see the amount of articles coming out on a weekly basis, how many bottles of olive oil are sold worldwide. In Italy, the finest extra virgin cold pressed olive oil that is 30% anything but olive oil. That's the reality of the world today. As long as there's a tiber to make money, labeling is what labeling is, just like you remember last year with the shot this year, you know, importers come to Edge of Soil, you gotta bring something to the market. You need a label. So they sew on whatever label they have in stock. So it says linen, doesn't say, has nothing to do with the garment. They just sew a label in it because the customs guy wants to see a label. So the food industry in the United States is not that hefka. It's a lot more in control. But the point is, I see from the olive oil is the best example, it's pamutz. Olive oil today, you cannot rely on what the label says, you need hashkacha. In America, certain hashkachas say no, you can. Eretz Yisrael, no one accepts it. That's reality. If you saw the list, if you want to email me, I'll be happy to send you. Erev Pesach, the Rabbanu put out a list showing 60 labels of olive oil. Each one had hashkacha stamped on it, each one was a fraud. 100% olive oil. And not one of them was 100% olive oil, some were no percent olive oil. They were water, emulsifiers, soy oil, and olive taste, and olive fragrance. Seriously, I'll show you the list. So I'm not an expert enough to tell you, yes, there are safeguards in place, but the bottom line is the best safeguard for religious Jews to buy something with a responsible hashkacha on it, and you know you've done the best you can do.
What's your view also on aluminum tins that have hashkacha on it?
What do you mean, what's my view?
No, because you said bottled water, why is bottled water have to have hashkacha, so like, why do aluminum tins have to have hashkacha?
Oh, you mean aluminum pans?
Because they smear it.
Right, they're smeared with tray foil. So I give it, I looked into that toy yesterday. Oh, you explained to me that they get to a certain point in the process where it gets hot enough to feel that anything is trafe is nullified because it's burnt off. And the Badatsman says, well, don't accept it. They said they smear with trafe. That's it, it's trafe. So it depends who you go by, the same thing. You know, the general rule is, and it's not, sometimes people misinterpret it, it's not a blow. And I'm tired of always people saying OU. It could be the OK, OU, Kufke. It's American Ashkochas versus Eretz Yisrael Ashkochas. It's not a blow one against the other. Eretz Yisrael lives on the standard of Lechatchila and not looking for the ways out.
But I think the more important point is how many people would think that an aluminum peel is smeared with tray for stuff. I think that's the more important point.
Right. And the Eretz Chavetz, every Shabbos in Baruch HaMachodesh has several places in Yerushalayim where they do Adon Kalim. Why? Because most of the pots sold today are straight to trade too. So the people in these communities know that once a month I can do Avolos Kalim all year round, not just every Pesach, have my pot being kosher off the color day old, and get on with my life quickly.
Do you want to give this out?
Everyone took.
Oh, everyone took one. Okay.
Should have. Everyone have? It could be worth it. Anyone not take any of the sheets?
Okay, so we're going to go over now the... I've always considered the everybody at one point has to be mafresh trumas and maisers. Why? Maybe you're visiting your aunt in Rehovos. I'll just pick that because I have an aunt in Rehovos, and she serves you salad, and she knows you're from, and you don't eat stuff. But what could be wrong with salad? So she serves salad, and now what do you do? So you have to be quick. To be my, and she's watching if you're eating her salad. So everyone really should know, or at least how to be mafresh trumas and maisers, even if you always buy with a heksher. And I'm here 14 years, I can count probably on the fingers of one hand, maybe two, the amount of times that I took trumas and maisers, because I guess I have to be moda b'rabim, I don't ibba maiser. Don't learn from me though, look into it, maybe you should, but the situations I've been in have been rare that I've taken trumas and maisers, but it happened. So you should always know how to do it. So when I looked at the Sidurim, and whether it's in Hebrew or even English translations, I felt they were pretty much incomprehensible. And an average intelligent person would not know what they're doing, would not figure out. Tzofon, Doron, they don't even know, you don't walk around with a compass. No one knows where's Tzofon, where's Doron. No one really knows what they're doing. So Rabosha Resnick here made a nusach that I felt, I don't know how much of the nusach is left, maybe most of it. I'm sorry.
maybe most of it, I don't know. But I work, we worked over, and you'll see Taka on the second sheet, on the second side. It says, Lili Nishmas Rechoma Rivka Basashu's Vulan, that's Rabashu's daughter, Leo Shalom. And it should be Taka Nili Nishama Fahar, that the basic Nusach came from Rabashu's work. Yeshikoyach. On sheet one, I'm not going to go over it. If you have any questions, ask me. I do, on the first side, meaning when it says on top a brief overview of a fresh Shulman Sumaisus, I just want to make one point about D1. That is, when you're taking Maaser Sheni, in Maaser Sheni years of the cycle, you're going, by the way, Bichil, you mentioned that by fruit, it's not always simple to know what year it belongs to. You may have to ask a shayla, because it's Tu Bishvat and it's Chanoto, so it's not always the year that you're in. It might be, the fruit might be from the year before, even though you're in this year. So, always complications. Always ask a shayla. I want to talk about D1, the pidyon. Now, Just to explain, maybe take notes. A pruta, when we talk about a pruta is 1/40th of a gram of silver. If you want to write that down so you'll always know it. I'm not going to do the math now. Maybe to what degree you have to look up the price of silver that day. You should have a general idea of the price of silver to know how much you're using up of your coin. Or if you have a shove, a pruta's worth of Maaser Sheni. Because if you don't have a shavas pruta's worth of Maaser Sheni, then in order to be poded, to redeem the Maaser Sheni, you need what's called a pruta chamura. You need a special kind of pruta which would allow you to add to it the pidyon of the pachos mishavas pruta, of less than a pruta. And it's difficult to get one, and that's why it's always worthwhile to belong to one of the two chronos, one of the two institutions that Rabbi Chiel has in the sheets, I think. If you don't want to have anything to do with Kippas Ruga people, you want to be a full-fledged, I'm joking, everybody. So you'll belong to Rabbi Frati's institution, and if you want to belong to the Otsa Haaretz people, that it was a pleasure to work with them, Big Talmid Chachamim, very machmir, perfect, everything I found, and Shemitah, I worked with them very closely, if you remember. That's Oitzah Haaretz, what's it called, Oitzah Haaretz, it's called. And you can belong to that. They basically parallel each other, actually, and give the same services and answer shilas.
Well, our Fati has better information.
Yeah, that, right.
And if you want to deal with
that. That's Rebbe Frati's Chisaron that he has information available in English. And okay, so a pruta is 1/40th of a gram of silver, and there are 28 grams of silver in an ounce of silver. 28 grams in an ounce of silver, and a pruta is 1/40th of the gram. That's all I'm telling you. You got to do the math yourself. You know, in the store, you have to look up the price of silver. You don't have to always do this, but you should do it to have a general idea. You want to know the price of silver in shkolim, and you want to know what a kilo of oranges cost, so then you estimate how much is a tenth of a kilo of oranges, how much does that cost, and then you translate it into silver. You'll get good at this if you do it. It's just math. I don't want to do the math now. You have to know what a pruta is. If you take off, if you're miser, if a tenth, Maaser Sheni, if a tenth of, I'm just explaining, you have to, at some point you want to know if it's a pruta or not. You know what your oranges cost you. You know what a tenth of your oranges is, approximately. So you know what a tenth of the oranges you bought, what that would cost. It costs a certain amount of shekel or of agurot, right? And you're going to look up the price of silver. You have to know, you should have a certain idea of the price of silver. If you belong to a keren, you don't have to do any of this. That's the mile of belonging to these things, because they do everything for you, and nowadays that's what people want. People don't want to do anything, myself included. you want to belong to a keren, and say they'll amafresh it on the pruta that they, on the coin that they have put aside for me. So I don't have to know about, and they make a cheshbon already. Rabbi Stein told me they figure for each person they set aside 6 or 8 prutos for each day. They put aside for each person, they're putting aside 6 or 8 prutos for each day, and they have for each person a pruta chabura, so you don't have to worry if it's less than a pruta. So really the best thing is to belong to these chronos, or decide I am never ever ever going to take off trumas and maisras, which is not such a good thing to decide, especially maybe you shouldn't be ever maisering. This is all for pidyon maisa sheni. You could keep a 10 shekel coin in your drawer and just, you can assume and make a quick cheshbon when it'll get used up, right? Because again, you have to do the math. A pruta is a 40th of a gram of silver, and there's 28 grams of silver in an ounce of silver. And then you have to look up on the internet or in a newspaper how much silver cost, how many shekalim. So then you know, and you'll figure out with a couple of presses on the calculator on that any given day how much a pruta is. It doesn't fluctuate that much. And most of the time you'll be able to be mafresh on, you'll be able to be poda your meiser on a 10 shekel coin that you have in your drawer. And you really don't have to worry about it getting used up. You can make a quick calculation. How many times are you going to meiser, you know, during the year? But, again, if you have less than a shaver pruta, because you have this one orange that you went to your aunt's house in Rehovos, and according to your calculations, a tenth of the orange, it's not really a tenth of the orange, because it's less, because it's a tenth after meiserishin was taken off, and the truma, but that's negligible. So a tenth of what was left, and that maybe that'll translate into less than a shaver pruta. So now you have a problem. So again, the easiest way is to belong to a keren, because people generally do not have this pruta chamura, which allows them to be poda less than a shaver pruta.
Yeah. What do you do with the coin?
You wait till shnas habiur, and in shnas habiur you have to destroy it.
Destroy the coin.
When there's biur, that's biur maisus, if you heard of it, on year 4, before Pesach, and on year 7, before Pesach, you destroy it. They take. Now, what do the chronos do? I don't know, Rabbi Stein explained to me, but I wasn't listening, because they have a lot of, you know, they have hundreds of pruta chamur, of coins, of all these people. I told you 6 to 8 prutas. He told me, I think, that they destroy, they don't wait for Shas Abir, they destroy it all along the way. They destroy it. He said he used to learn with Rabbi Reichenberg b'Chavrusa in Yesodot, and he said like the first time they were doing it, they waited till Shas Abir, and help! Like no, they couldn't do it. They were spending a whole day Erev Pesach yet. Erev Pesach, they're sitting there trying to destroy these coins. So he said no more. Okay, this is all a hakdama. What? About what? Well, whatever might be an inyan, but certainly the mitzvah d'oraisa of Bir Maisris overrides that. And I don't know, is there an inyan not to destroy money? My kids do it all the time.
Can you convert like 5, 10 shekels and put that into a paper and just shred the paper bill?
No. You can't use paper. Paper is a shtar. You have to use a coin.
How much approximately
is the pruta today? I told you, don't ask me. I don't know. Look it up. Rabbi Katz, I think, knows. You can look it up. Again, click, click. You'll know how much silver cost in terms of Israeli shekalim. Bang, bang on the calculator. I've told you everything you need to know. Pruta is a 40th of a gram of silver, and there's 28 grams of silver in an ounce. There's two kinds of ounces, by the way. This is the ounce that they use by a metal. Troy ounce. Okay. Okay, now we're going to go to the paper which says procedure and nusach fafrushes trumas and maisras. Once again, I'll repeat, if you belong to one of these two chronos, then you don't have to worry about the coin at all. They take care of it for you. And you don't have to worry about having a pruta chamura if the maiser sheni is worth less than a shavet pruta. They take care of everything for you. The costs are minimal. What does it cost to be a chaver, a monui? It's a very, very cheap.
It used to be 60 shekels.
It's written inside the sheet. I called up last week. The prices are going. The information's coming. And what is the push on? The voicemail is coming.
And plus, it's you're supporting them. Either one. Wonderful institutions. Both of them. Yeah. This is another shiloh. It's called Achilas Haroi. If you take one off and just eat it in your chutzner, you probably don't have to, but sometimes you can walk into the house and that creates a whole thing, or if you put it aside for Shabbos, there are many halachas about that.
And
such questions are best emailed to me and I'll see the exact circumstance, because sometimes, as in every area in halacha, a slight change of circumstance can change the din. But in general, there is such a halacha that achilas haroi, you're okay, but it depends where exactly that achilas haroi is taking place. And something that you might consider achilas haroi, like if you take off two, and you're already holding two, that's already, you have to take off. So, okay. So now we're going to go to the paper, which says on top, procedure and nusach, afrashos, trumos, and maasros. Okay. Basic guidelines, these species of produce must be dealt with separately. Pear separately, tomato separately, each in its own pile, and you have to make separate separations for each pile. The recital of the statements below, however, can include at one time, cross out the comma after the word time, can include at one time all that has been separated. Okay, each species of produce should be in the same physical location, and you can't do it Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, it's much less complicated than it might sound, and probably much less complicated than I'm going to make it sound also. The best thing when you're dealing with something we're not familiar with is to understand the concept. Once you understand the concept, then everything becomes easy. And you go, oh yeah, this is that. The bottom line is that what you're dealing, you're taking off Truma and Maaser Rishon, and another Maaser. We'll talk about Maaser Sheni. That's most years it'll be Maaser Sheni. That's what you're... Now, but you only have to be Mafresh. You only have to physically separate Truma and Truma's Maaser of the Maaser. That's a tenth of the Maaser. Because that you have to physically separate, because that you have to get rid of. That's Kadosh. And that you're not allowed to eat. And you have to... If you have to get rid of it, that will equal a little more than 1% of the total. These two things that you have to physically be mafresh, because why? The 9/10 of the Maaser Rishon you don't have to physically be mafresh because you're allowed to eat it. Nowadays you don't have to give it to a Levi. My loss, my tough luck. And you can eat it yourself, it has no kedusha. And how do you know the guy's Olevi? I'm also Mechaver of Olaraya. So you can eat Maaser Rishon. But you can't eat the tenth of the Maaser Rishon, which is called Trumas Maaser, which has to be given to a Kohen and is like Truma. The Maaser Rishon you could eat, the Maaser Sheni you're going to be Poda. And the Maaser Oni, for all intents and purposes, you're going to be poda, even though the word poda is not a precise word, but you're going to trade it in and give money instead of what you're mafresh in most cases. So what you have to physically separate is a little more than 1% of everything. Why? The 1% of everything is a tenth of a tenth. A tenth of a tenth is a hundredth, right? And the little, so that's going to be a trumas maaser. And then the more is going to be the truma that you can take just a little bit. So that's why we're saying you're making two piles. Because you're taking, one pile is going to be what you have to physically separate. And the other pile, you're not going to have to physically separate anything. So you're going to make two piles. One pile, we call it two piles. One pile is a little more than 1% of the whole. Again, why? Because 1% of the whole is going to become Trumas Maaser, and the little more is going to become Truma. Not in the order I just said it, Truma comes first, But I'm explaining the concept, right? So you have two piles, that's what it says. Begin by physically separating the produce into two separate sections. One section should be greater than 1% of the total. Again, it's going to be truma plus trumas meiser is more than 1%. 1% is trumas meiser, a tenth of a tenth. More than 1% is truma plus trumas meiser. Even a little more than 1%. So we're going to call that, and we put it in quotes, the greater than 1% section, just as we refer to it. And the second section is everything else. Okay, number two means read through everything, so make sure you know what you're doing before you do it. Always a good idea, rarely done. Number three is to make a bracha. That was a joke. Number three is if you make a bracha if it's tevel vaday. Now, number four is what you're doing. You're going to skip number three if it's not tevel vaday. If it's tevel sofik, you're not going to make a bracha. So you're going to go to number four. Now, here's what you're doing. You're going to take truma gadola first. Now you have to, where is the truma gadola? Now here's my problem with most neschols, besides the fact that most neschols are incomprehensible. Stamazoi. But I went away from the north and the south, and we're talking about the top and the bottom. Everybody, nobody knows where north and south is, but everybody knows what top and bottom is. So, you have a pile of tefua that's great, we're calling the greater than 1% section. And then the, everything else. So you're going to take off truma, and you're going to say, the portion on the top of the greater than 1% section, that's more than the 1%, is truma gadola. Okay? And you're specifying where it is. It's on top. You don't have to do anything. It sits there. Once you become adept at this, it's really, you're going to say it like you say Asheray, unfortunately. Right? You say, once you understand what you're doing, you have one pile that's a little more than 1%, because it's Truma plus Trumas Meiser. Trumas Meiser is a tenth of a tenth. So first you're designating Truma in this pile, and you're saying the more, whatever here that's more than 1% of the whole should be truma, okay? And that should be on top. Whatever's on top of the pile that's more than 1% is truma. Now, you want to make the rest of it trumas meiser. You can't just take trumas meiser. You have to first designate meiser, which is a tenth, and then take a tenth of the tenth. You can't take a tenth of a tenth before you designate the tenth, right? You got that? You can't just say a hundredth of the whole should be Trumas Meiser. That would not be good. So the words we're going to say is going to just put everything together, quickly designate Meiser, and then say Trumas Meiser. Now really you've only physically separated the Trumas Meiser, a hundredth of the whole. So here's what we're going to say. The exact 1% that's now left in this greater than 1% section, remember that was this section, plus, now the plus is because you're really designating now Meiser, and then you're forgetting about it. Now Meiser is 9 times what's left. See why? You took off Trumas Meiser, that was more than 1%. You're left with 1%, that's 1/100th of what's left. So 9 times that is your Meiser, because Meiser is a tenth of the whole. This is a hundredth of the whole. So 9 times that. So plus 9 more of that very same amount. And I'm cross out the word right. That is next to it. It should not say right next to it. That is next to it. I don't like, I went over it again. It shouldn't say right next to it. And you're designating the place to be on the bottom of the second section, right? It's a designation. The bottom. You have a pile of stuff. If you have it, if it's flat, then say on the left. And because soon we're going to talk about the right, because that's going to be Meiser Sheni. So on the left, just designate an area. If you know where north and south is, fine, say north and south. A lefty pitcher is called a southpaw. So if you want to know, the south is on the left and the north is on the right. Okay? So the exact 1% that is now left in this greater than 1% section, plus 9 more of that very same amount that is next to it on the bottom of the second section, is miser. Right? You see how? Because it's 10%. You said the 100th plus 9 times that, so that's a tenth. So that's miser, but you don't really have to physically do anything about the 9, because that's going to sit there. Then you say, and now, and cross out the word original, I don't like that word either. And now, that exactly 1% of the greater than 1% section is hereby designated as Trumas Meiser of, and then change the word the to that, of that Meiser. So we crossed out the word right, we crossed out the word original, and we changed of the Meiser to of that Meiser. So now you've designated Trumas Meiser and Truma, and that you're going to double wrap, triple wrap, right? You're going to do whatever you do with it. Now we're up to Meiser Sheni. You don't have to do anything. You just have to talk about it. That's number 5. Now number 5 should have 2 paragraphs to it, really. That's how I would do it now. The first paragraph would start with the words, if taking Meiser Sheni, as it does now. And the second paragraph would say, if taking Meiser Ani, go to number 8. Number 5 would have 2 paragraphs, the one it has now, and it would have a second paragraph that says, if taking Meiser Ani, go to number 8. Okay, if taking Meiser Sheni, you say, 10% of the remaining produce, very important, 10% of the remaining produce, because you're only taking 10% of what remains after you've taken off Truma and Meiser. You don't take 10% of the whole, you take 10% of what's left. That it, in other words, if you started out with 100 units and we'll call 1 unit Truma, right? And what's 10% of 99? 9.9. And that's Meiser. So 10% of the remainder is 8 point whatever is going to be your Meiser Sheni. Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, what it means, 10% of the remainder. This is something that doesn't come across in the Nuschos. 10% of what's left after the designation of Truma and Meiser, and the whole Meiser is, so 10% of what's left, and you're saying, I wrote that it's located on the top of the second section, because you have to be Kovei Amok, and you have to say where it is. That's Meiser Sheni for all the remaining produce. Now you're going to be Poda it. Right? You've been Mafresh it. 10% of the remaining produce, I would put a comma after the word produce. 10% of the remaining, in fact, there should be a comma there, very important. 10% of the remaining produce, comma, that is located on top of the second section, comma, is hereby designated as Meiser Sheni for all the remaining produce. Yeah. Yeah, just take the opposite side. Now, number 6 just says if it's subject vadai to pidyon, meaning it's vadai, then you have to make a bracha. Go to number 7 if you're skipping the bracha. And now, there's something here that I copied from the other Nuschos and I realize is a mistake. It's a mistake. All the Nuschos, except I think the Kronos have it right, but in the Sidurim there's a problem now. If you are poda your own Meiser Sheni onto your coin, you have to add a fifth, right? Now, but the Meiser Sheni has to be worth a pruta. And you're poda onto a pruta, right? But you have to add a fifth. So look at the words. The value of this 10% plus an additional chomesh, which I give explanatory, you don't say the parentheses, they are just explanatory. The value of this 10% plus an additional chomesh, and I explain in brackets when you have to do that. And chomesh means 25% of the value of the 10%. Now here it says, is hereby redeemed onto a shaveh pruta. But that's incorrect, because if you're eating a chomesh, you have to be pulled in onto a pruta of a chomesh of a pruta. A pruta of a chomesh of a pruta. You can't be, because you're eating a fifth of the value. So you can't be pulled in just onto a pruta. You have to say onto a pruta and a fifth. A pruta and a fifth of a pruta. A pruta and a fifth.
You have to accommodate the chomesh.
Because you have to.
And you can always take a bigger amount and put onto a pruta.
Yeah, but not the chomesh. The ikur ma'aser sheni has to be onto a pruta. And then you have to add a fifth. The ma'aser sheni itself has to be a pruta's worth. You're being nifted by a pruta. So when you, and the neschals don't have this. It should be onto a pruta v'chomesh. Now, I see in Rebbe Frati's Keren, which I have a sheet of here, they do everything for you, but they're informing you no chomesh will be taken. Because they say, we own the coin. We're not giving you the coin. It's not your coin. When you belong to the Keren and we designate a coin for you, Rabbi Reichenberg writes, it's my coin, and I'm letting you use it to be poded. And this way, you don't have to keep, they don't have to keep the cheshbonus of the fifth. Because if you pode ma'aser sheni onto someone else's coin, you don't have to add a fifth. So they avoid the fifth surcharge by keeping it as their coin. So you should realize that when you're a member of the Keren and you say, I want my coin, they say, it's not your coin, it's our coin. So that's one good thing they do. But if you do it at home and you do this yourself and you have a 10 shekel coin in your drawer, so you have to add a fifth, and you're using up a prut of a chomesh of the 10 shekel coin. Okay?
If one didn't say that in past time, did that mess it up?
I think so. If you say that the ma'aser sheni and a chomesh should be nifte onto a pruta, if you say that it's not chal lechora. Lechora, if you pull the ma'aser sheni and a chomesh of it onto a pruta, it turns out that you were pulled the ma'aser sheni onto less than a pruta, which you can't do. The Kronos caught this when they formed the Kronos. I think they changed the nusach that's in all of the sidurim. Oh no, they couldn't have done that because they don't take a chomesh. Someone chapped somewhere. And I discussed it with Rabbi Stein, and he said, definitely, you have to say, onto a pruta v'chomesh. And again, if the cheshbon is that you're doing it, if your ma'aser sheni is less than a shaveh pruta, then you'll need a pruta chamura, and you're not going to get a pruta chamura. So just join a Karen. I really recommend it. It's a good value.
Can I be mashmeh the pruta to my wife?
Your wife's not good enough, I'm afraid. It's the same rishus. The chomesh really, it's a negligible amount of money. It's just easier for the chronos, it's easier for them to keep cheshbon. They don't have to keep adding a fifth. When you're doing it times like 6 to 8 a day, they're assuming everybody that, they have to be machmir. If you belong to this Karen, they have to make sure that any reasonable person, even if you're buying from the shuk, every day, right? They have a cheshbon. They have to provide you with the service that they're using up their coins. They're not mafresh trumas and maisis for you. I want to make that very, very clear. They're not mafresh trumas and maisis for you. You have to be mafresh everything, but but they're taking care. You're just saying on the coin that the Karen has for me. That's all. The use of the Karen with Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni is you say onto the coin that the Karen has for me. That's all you have to say. And it's only Ma'aser Sheni. Yeah, you opposed it. You opposed it on their coin. And finally, number 8 is Ma'aser Ani. It's also kedai to belong to a Karen for that, because they have worked out all the halachic shtick, I'll call it. It's a bad word. I apologize for it. They have worked out all the halachic maneuverings that you could. You're not going to take your piece of orange and find an oni and give it to him. You're not. But why shouldn't you do the mitzvah of Maaser Oni? It's a beautiful mitzvah. So I've told people that they don't belong to a Karen, Taka, to go just themselves, take the worth of it and give it to Kupa Shel Tzedakah, and they'll give it to the Aniyim. But the Kronos work it out in a much more l'chatchila technically okay way. Because really not like, who are you to buy? My Sarani doesn't belong to you. Who says you can buy it and give them money? So you start with like a cooler type thing. There's an umdana of Aniyim would rather have money than have this piece of orange that you've touched with your hands, and they have no use for it. And how are you going to give it to them, or what are they going to do with it? So, like the Rabbi Spira said before, Rabbi Chil says, it's like a cooler. It's much more kedai, I feel, to belong to the Kronos than have all sorts of London and zeicha for the ani, and then there's zeicha for you, and then you're zeicha for them, and that's the best way to do it. Okay, that's really it. Questions? Contact your Molina. Oh, no.
If you want to join, you do it by phone. It's very simple. You can find a convention within 48 hours. They send you all materials. They send you a laminated card with the nusach.
In English, if you want.
Tell them English if you want.
And you can subscribe to Halichos Sadeh.
Right. That's in Hebrew.
Okay.
I'm glad if you do it to get like a 40-something page book that explains the picture.
So I really have to redo this to put it on the website.